Hello and welcome to the Elves of the Visitor Economy podcast, a podcast where people who work in tourism, hospitality, events and everything in between come for real life stories, insights and tips to market and grow their businesses. We are so pleased that you're here today. Thanks for listening and enjoy the episode. Our final episode of this series features the inspirational and oh-so-humble Beck Pryor from Pryor Shop in Bristol. Any shopping centre or retailer could learn so much from Beck. Beck is a craft person. She's a maker and without really setting out to do so, has created a new visitor experience that combines retail with the local creative culture that customers and visitors can actually get involved in. With shops in Old Market and Quakers Friars in Bristol, she's brought together 150 makers, many of whom work in the shop, and lead interesting workshops based around their skills. Do you know it? Have you been in? We all know that the high street is changing and the homogenised shopping experience is driving more and more people online. But what Beck has done through drive and instinct is truly amazing. She's on a mission to bring a new retail experience to the high street that is considered sustainable and fun. For anyone who's involved in retail, destination marketing, or just has a love of shopping and hearing about other people's stories for turning their passion into a full-time job, you will love hearing Beck's story. Beck shares some of her tips for how she's got where she is today, including her own battle with leukemia, which gave her the space she needed to follow her passion. She talks about how she's used her own social channels and natural marketing skills to shine a light not only on her own shops, but on those local businesses in the area. As I mentioned, this is the final episode in the first series. We're taking a break for the summer so I can spend some time with my children and Ali can have some time out to settle into her new house. Finishing this podcast series, I reflect on how far we've come since our first episode went live in February. What was a dream in 2020 is now a reality, and I've got to take a moment to think, wow, I did it. A huge thanks must go to Ali, who has helped me bring this together and get it out to you every other week. Doing a podcast does take time, and running my business as well as being a mum to two energetic 10 and 11 year olds has been a challenge at times, but I couldn't have done it without her. Everyone needs an Ali. The highlight of my year was reaching 500 downloads and getting this amazing review from Catherine Davis, Head of Tourism at Visit West. So I'm going to read it out, even though it's a bit cringy. I just so appreciate this. Elves of the Visitor Economy is a revelation. While subsectors within tourism and hospitality exist, what Kelly does brilliantly is to tease out the layered stories of individual businesses and demonstrate the interdependency of this brilliant, diverse industry. For fascinating and candid insights, this is a must listen. Oh, honestly, reading it makes me cringe a little bit, but it really did make me feel so happy to get such feedback. Anyway, our podcast has now been listened to just under 700 times, and with each episode being downloaded 62 times. And whilst this may not seem a lot, to us, this is a great start. When we come back in September, we've got some great guests lined up, including Nick Hounsfield from The Wave. It's just the most mind-blowing inland surf attraction. I'm sure you've heard of it. Philip Walker, who's now Head of Culture for the City of Gloucester and is transforming the city, bringing with him all of his knowledge from working in the cultural sector in Bristol. I'll be speaking to Hannah and Kate, directors of super creative Bristol-based event company Bakehouse Factory, who create theatrical experiences for shopping centres and retail spaces and visitor attractions. You can see their latest creation at the closing celebration of Bristol Zoo Gardens this summer. I'll also be chatting to travel PR extraordinaire Fiona Rees, whose knowledge and experience in generating national travel media interest is first class. Aside from our wonderful guests, we also want to share more marketing tips and insights from our own experience, as well as from other specialist marketers who we've worked with or admire. In our newsletter, we'll be featuring helpful marketing tips, as well as ideas for processes and software that we believe will transform the way you're working to make marketing the visitor economy as effective as possible. Ali and I have learnt so much about podcasting over the past 6 months, but we need to know what you guys think about the Elves of the Visitor Economy podcast now. We have created a short survey, which you'll find in the show notes and on our website at elvesofthevisitoreconomy.co.uk. Please, please, please take a moment to give us your feedback. As we know your time is really precious, we want you to continue to listen to this, and we want to make sure it's as useful and as enjoyable as possible. And lastly, before we go to today's episode with the lovely Beck Pryor, don't forget, if you haven't already done so, make sure you subscribe to Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts to ensure you don't miss our second series in September. And please help us by leaving a review. It's a bit like TripAdvisor for podcasts. It really does help us.
I always get a bit speechless whenever I am interviewed, just because the introduction to where we are now, it's like, it's not imposter syndrome because we've worked so hard to get here, but it does make me feel, a blush, you know, just thinking of like how, you know, we've got a shop in Cabot Circus. It's amazing. Like, it's absolutely amazing.
Well, congratulations. Well done. And tell me a little bit more about Pryor Shop. What is it and what do you do?
So Pryor Shop, it is a sustainable lifestyle shop. So we sell everything from clothes to jewellery to skincare to homewares to prints, candles, key rings, you know, a whole plants, a whole spectrum of things. The difference is that we only stock things that have been made responsibly and sustainably. And we sort of, I always use the word vet because it's easy, it's an easy word to say, but I don't mean that. It sounds a bit kind of, I don't know, strict, but I suppose, no, we are strict. Yeah. We send an application form to each maker, and it has questions like, how do they manage their waste? Who have they checked their suppliers, you know, green credentials? How they make their work, how they have their packaging, just so that, not to catch them out, but just so that we can confidently say that, you know, that we are an environmentally friendly shop.
Mm-hmm. So how did you get into this?
So I am a maker. So my own business is Pryor Made. Mm-hmm. And that has evolved, which I'll tell you about in a sec. But Pryor Shop happened because I needed a bigger studio for Pryor Made. Gets confusing. I wish I'd called them two separate different things, but now everyone gets confused with the websites as well. So I needed a bigger studio space. I'd outgrown in Bristol Studios in Barton Hill, mm-hmm. and my birch plywood products, you know, they'd be all over the wood room, all over the shared space, all over my studio space, and you could see people just getting really annoyed with my work. And a friend of mine who has the Bristol Upholstery Collective in Totterdown.
Right.
She used to have the shop in Old Market, and she said she'd moved out, but sort of, you know, said, sort of did a shout out to lots of makers and said, you know, there's this space, it's great. Anybody fancy it? And I kept being like, oh, that would be lovely, but no, it's too much. And then I spoke to the landlord and they said, yeah, turn it into a studio. It's fine. You don't have to have it as a shop. You have to have like some kind of window display, but it doesn't have to be an open shop. So I thought, great, that's what I'll do. I'll just have my stuff in the window by appointment and then it'll be my workshop. So all my woodworking machines and stuff. And then when I looked at the space, I was like, I'm so deeply passionate about, high quality, sustainable design. And there's going to be loads of other artists that are the same. So I started contacting artists that I knew of who shared the same ethos as me. And loads of people were interested. 2019 in January, we got the keys. And then April 2019, we opened the shop. And it was brilliant. It was brilliant. It was because it was before lockdown. Everyone was really interested in Old Market. It was really sort of slowly... It doesn't race Old Market up, you know, to the peak, but it was sort of getting somewhere. There's some fabulous, fabulous independents still in Old Market. But lockdown just completely knocked it. Mm. Completely. I mean, it's Old Market's challenges are it's such a fast road. You can't have anything outside. All it takes is just a couple of businesses to close and it drops down again. Old Market kind of relied on loads of the office workers in all the, like St. Philip's, Temple Meads, you know, all that kind of footfall. And it's just not come back. It's just not come back at all.
Really?
And so many businesses are struggling there, really, really struggling and trying to pivot to find ways of being online. And it's just such a shame because the Old Market is so close to the city. Mm. So close. I mean,
I'm really interested in finding out about Old Market and that whole sense of place, like you said. And I'm so sad to hear that it's struggling at the moment, like lots of places. But and to kind of dig into your thoughts about what could be done to make it better. Mm-hmm. And likewise, Cabot Circus, you know, because two very, very different spaces.
Yeah.
But going back to your journey for a minute. Mm-hmm. So you created that space and that was opened in April 2019. About how many makers did you have in there at the time?
We started off with 11.
And how many have you got now?
150.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
So
so you went from 11 to 150 and you support these makers. And I guess, like you're saying, their values are very similar to yours. And so the people who are buying your products are going to be similar. They want the same things. Mm-hmm. So that's great. So you've got this collective audience as well as this collective like marketing opportunity through all of you. Mm-hmm. And over the years, I guess you've, I've just been looking at your marketing. Your marketing is fantastic and what you've done over the years. Where did you get that from? Because is this a natural thing if you had support? Because, I mean, your Instagram feed is fantastic and I'm sure you use other channels. But for me, I love to look at Instagram. Yeah. Has that been a big channel for you? How have you grown your marketing around this?
This is where I get really speechless. everything that we've done with the shop and how it's grown has felt easy. I don't actually know how it's happened. And I don't mean that, it's hard to say because I don't want anyone to feel jealous of that because I know some people really, really try. Mm-hmm. And I work so hard. But having this shop is combined all those, like as a creative, we all do so many different jobs, don't we? Like we dip our toe in that water. And we feel really disconnected to where we're going and always questioning, you know, what we're doing with our lives, why we're doing it, you know, when will I ever get paid? And taking on the shop, I didn't realize at the time how much it was pulling in my love and my experiences for everything. You know, I used to work at Arnold Feeney as the outreach coordinator. I used to make props, puppets and signage. I used to manage all my like teams of people, but for projects doing public art installations. I worked at Cottam School as an art technician. I worked at Young Bristol as a like creative youth leader in all their youth clubs. And obviously designing my own products and all of that feeds into, I mean, basically the shop is a big project that I manage, you know, and I've learned the power of marketing through, you know, doing workshops. I've learned the power of managing people and keeping everyone feeling safe and supported. You know, it's like an extension and a gelling of everything that I've ever done, if that makes sense.
It totally makes sense. So when I look at you get coverage, I mean, you've got a lot of national coverage.
Yeah.
I mean, you won an award in 2021. Yeah, yeah. I mean, that is amazing. Tell me about that, because Holly Tucker, and I know her from the podcast Conversations of Inspiration, but obviously she was the founder of Not on the High Street.
Yeah. So she does every year the Independent Awards.
Yeah.
And then she has different categories. And so we were like High Street Shop. And then you have, this is terrible. I can't remember the other categories, but, you know, a range of like from startups to like sort of community heroes.
Yes.
To, you know.
Okay. Makers or something.
Yeah. Sorry, Holly, if you listen to this, I can't remember. You've become so focused on your category. And it's just amazing. And it's not only is there a prize, not only is there like, the marketing of it, but yeah, the whole of the actual event, but the whole thing is a campaign.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like everyone's fully supporting each other and sharing each other's wins. And, you know, I started a chat group with all the other people in our category. Cause I was like, I feel really awkward competing against fellow businesses that I admire and I really care about, you know? So I started a little group chat and just said, we're all in this, we're all being nominated. Like, we all would be ecstatic if whoever wins, but let's do some cross marketing on this. Let's try and do a giveaway. Let's try and, you know, and we all chipped in and did a gift card giveaway. But yeah, Holly's amazing. She's absolutely amazing. She's like a, I think she's nicknamed the Hurricane Holly. But she's so passionate.
Yeah.
Like so, and it's true. Mm. You know, she's not, it's not a, her, yeah, her support and her passion is not for marketing purposes. Mm-hmm. It's deeply rooted in her.
And that's what makes a difference though, I think, isn't
exactly.
it? And I think that's what's made your difference. Yeah, like going back to what you were saying earlier about how you were, it comes from within.
Yeah. Yeah, completely.
And when we met today, prior to us recording this, you were telling me that you had a following mm-hmm. on social media mm-hmm. through Prior Made.
Yeah.
And then you brought that into Prior Shop. And that's been a bit of a challenge for you, hasn't it, in terms of your own personal, like your personal voice?
Yeah.
Because
as
the business grows, you have to share that voice with others. Tell me a little bit about that, and how has that been a challenge?
So I suppose this links actually in with PR as well, but yeah, I'll get back to that bit. That so my journey through starting way back at the beginning, Prior Made didn't exist before I had leukemia, and that's like such a bombshell to drop into any podcast or interview. But I was always creative. I was doing lots of sets and puppets and stuff, and working at Arnold Feeney. And then I was diagnosed with acute myeloid leukemia, and that was in 2009. And
awful.
it was I can't even sugarcoat it. It was awful, absolutely awful. I had at the time a favorable, they said, treatable type. So I had 6 months of chemotherapy. It was really intense. But unfortunately, a year later, it relapsed. And then I had to have a bone marrow transplant and lots of radiotherapy, and was out of action for a couple of years. And it was during this time that I never stop. You know, I've always been a workaholic. I love working. I love learning, and have been like that since I was a kid. But I didn't have the energy to go to work. So I started making little pieces of jewelry using inner tube earrings. I started going back into my studio and just calmly, mindfully, you know, carefully, slowly making little products and stuff. And then I started doing weekend markets and building up, and I did more markets and shops, and, you know, and it just grew and grew and grew.
Mm-hmm.
But if it wasn't for leukemia, I wouldn't have had the time to do that, because so many creatives have to fit in making alongside a job, alongside childcare, you know, and it's always trying to wedge it in.
Mm.
Whereas I had 2 years to develop my product design practice. And it's something I never really meant. I don't mention too much about leukemia, because I definitely don't want it to be like a, let's get the violin out. You know, this is my X Factor song, my X Factor backgrounds or whatever, sob story. But it was massive. It was the best thing that happened out of leukemia, you know,
Isn't that crazy?
Wish it on anyone.
Wow.
But there's a reason for telling you that bit, that people have followed Prior Made through that journey.
Mm.
And I wasn't on Instagram at the time, to be honest, but it is part of me and my passion to make work, and my, I suppose, passion to be connected to people and be supportive. And, you know, it's hard to say if that experience enhanced what was already there.
Yes.
You know, it's really changed my, it's hard to say, but back to your question, that with Instagram, I think I built up such a huge following on Prior Made and Prior Shop, because people were following me
mm-hmm.
and my enthusiasm and all my typos and all my grammar issues and, you know, all these kind of like very overexcited, passionate posts. And now we've grown the team and my time is spent managing, which is more time consuming than I ever expected it to be. I'm delegating social media to people and press, and, you know, which is amazing, but then you lose my voice and my, and I never wanted the shop to be about me.
Hmm.
But interestingly, people are following me.
Mm.
So it's that, how do you, it's something that we're learning at, trying to figure out as a team now, mm-hmm. to how to keep that connection with people so that we don't, because we're a commercial, we're not a commercial shop, we're in a commercial district.
Yep.
And we don't want to become like, here at Prior, we have, you know, and it become really like detached from a community. So it's, how do we keep that personal approach, but it not be me?
Have you, no, I, that's very difficult. It's a real challenge, isn't it? For any business that is, or organization that is beyond one.
Yeah.
Because people love personal.
Exactly.
They absolutely love personal.
Especially now after lockdown, you know, it's, people want to connect with brands that align with their own personal values, you know, that they want to see behind the scenes. They want to feel connected to the highs and lows. You know, they don't want us, you know, that kind of like, no, they want opinions.
Yeah.
So what we're doing at the moment is every member of staff signs their name off when they do a social media post.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah.
So that, and I've said to everyone, you know, this is the start. Like, well, no, actually, I haven't dictated what to write, but I've said, be passionate, be honest, and talk about the product, how you are feeling about them, no matter mm-hmm. what that is, just talk about it. Because when they first started taking over the social media, it was quite bland.
Mm.
It was trying to please too many people.
Yeah.
And I think when you're trying to please too many people, you please no one,
yep.
you know? And then I say that everyone's got complete free reign of style, design, everything on the stories.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's hard being a shop because you can't, ultimately you're trying to, for us to survive, we need to sell stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no other money coming in apart from, selling experiences and products. And so we do have to keep pushing products, but also making sure that we use the platform to make people feel connected.
Mm.
And I suppose way back to your first question, like, what is Prior Shop? I wanted it to always be more than just a retail space.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted it to be a place, like a hub, like a creative hub. So we have workshops every Thursday, Saturday and Sunday. We have an exhibition space. We are starting to run off the space for like book launches, talks, discussions, meetings, hot desking. We've got a photography studio that we hire out to makers, and trying to do everything as like lower cost as possible. So it's just accessible to as many people as we can.
I'm really interested in that whole concept of community, and I mean, my passion is in places, connecting with people,
mm-hmm.
and seeing how, I mean, I'm really interested in what's happening with Old Market, because I've seen the changes over the years. And as you say, I saw it becoming something special, and it's such a shame to see that it's now really, things have, you know, really challenging. It's the same with Quaker's Friars and Cabot in terms of like what drives footfall into a place like this. So what I've seen from what you do from a marketing perspective, you've created this, you've got values that are very Bristol, if you like, mm-hmm. or I mean, you've got your sustainable kind of, but it's also very Bristol. From a visitor economy perspective, if people are coming into the city, they see something very distinctive, and that's what people want.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want this homogenized space.
Mm-hmm.
They want to know, you know, the kind of people behind the scenes. So when they come in, it's amazing. That's why I was really attracted to, in terms of knowing that there was workshops and experiences here, because I think for anyone that's coming into the city, they can sit down, they can learn about stuff, they can chat to local people about life. That's what we want, isn't it? When we go somewhere else, we want to chat about those things. Mm-hmm. And that's what brings places alive.
Yeah, completely.
And if you've got that community of life, then it kind of exudes outwards and people want to know more, which will attract more visitors in.
Yeah,
so I think what you're doing in a small way at the moment, which is growing, is absolutely what needs to happen in so many different places. Mm. And I mean, I'm really interested. Like you said, you do amazing PR. I've seen that. You've got that nailed. You've got your Instagram and you've got your, your social media that's, you're doing really well at, despite the fact that, you know, it's like you're kind of challenged with is the tone of voice is right and the like. And, it'd be interesting. I've sat down with lots of different organizations and looked at brand and kind of what your brand values are and creating a framework within that that everybody understands. Mm-hmm. And I think they get it anyway from what I can and understand. And then having a content plan that meets those. Do you have a content plan that meets your values? So you've got those different elements. These are the things that we want to talk about to people. Yeah, yeah. Do you have that?
On a very basic level, we have that. But we, at the moment, we're like, it's really interesting learning how to manage a team while teaching them tasks that they've never done before. Mm. But me learning how to manage them learning too. You know, it's like this, it's really, and it's great because everyone here is on board. Like we've all... I'm very, very open and very honest. And so this has made me laugh because I sat down with a member of staff who is a fantastic, fantastic copywriter. And we were planning a social media schedule, looking at our brand identity and values and wrote this big plan. And then we keep meaning to stick to it, but things just keep coming up, you know, or we'll get a new delivery and we'll be like, oh, let's take photos of this. And so that our like planning goes out the window. But it was really nice to do, to always have that as a background, you know, like, okay, make sure that we always go back to this. It's honestly, I'd laugh every day of how much fun, how difficult it is, but also how much fun it is to be part of a team who really care about being here and are really keen to learn and are really up for trying anything.
Mm. But it comes out and you can see that in your social. I love that. It's brilliant. So before we move, because I'm really interested in the kind of place aspect of it, how do you convert that into product sales?
In terms of social media and PR stuff.
Yeah, right. What works for you? What are some of the things that have worked really well?
Join in PR Dispatch.
Oh,
have you heard of that?
No, what's that?
Absolutely amazing. So PR Dispatch they're not paying me for any marketing or anything. Like, they are an independent PR company who are, Rosie, who is the founder, she used to do lots of PR for different companies and then realized that as a maker, you can actually control it yourself if you had the knowledge of how to do PR. So PR Dispatch is almost like an online, is like a course,
right?
And a membership. So you pay monthly or annually, but let's for ease say monthly for a membership. You've got all this online learning content of how to pitch, when to pitch, how to templates, email templates, how to do line sheets, a whole Facebook support group, and a huge database of press that they keep updated, making sure that the people are still the journalists. They track journalist requests on Twitter and put them into the database.
Oh my gosh, this is an amazing resource.
Amazing.
Is this for independent shops? Is it a focus on that?
It's for any independent.
Is it?
Yeah.
That's so good. I've really not heard of them. And where are they based? Are they... It's not a Bristol organisation.
London, okay. I think.
So you kind of got engaged in that and that helped you.
I got engaged with that. And again, it's all this community working. So like a creative community so I am a member of Crafty Fox, which is a London market group. And PR Dispatch had offered a discount if you were a Crafty Fox member. So I'd heard about it in Sinead's podcast. It's all these connections that were independents, all like, you know, linking in with each other. And being a member of PR Dispatch, it's hard work because you have to build, you have to still contact the press and you have to keep nurturing it. It doesn't happen like that.
Absolutely,
you know, have to keep, you know, follow them on Instagram and be like, hey, here's a product, you know.
In the right way.
In the right way, exactly. So it takes time, and I've been a member of them for 4 years now, but we've had features in Independent, Guardian, Homes Interiors, Living, Marie Claire, Stylist, loads. And like the Guardian, for instance, we were in the Christmas gift guide, and it was Old Faithful, another brand here, it's beard oil, in the gifts for men. And it was like our Shopify, anyone that's got a Shopify subscription will know that ding, ding, ding of online sales. And it was just flying. So it's
as a result of the Christmas guide for the Guardian. Yeah, wow. Yeah. Okay. So that was one thing that worked.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
so I can imagine.
PR dispatch works. And it doesn't necessarily work with direct sales. Like, you know, if we're in Homes Interiors magazine or You magazine or whatever, it doesn't necessarily convert then.
No.
But it's, again, just showing, getting our name out, getting products out. So it makes people maybe look at our website, bookmark it, and then they'll go back another day. What else has worked for us?
You use Shopify. So you go through, and then in terms of the sales funnel, if you like, people go through that sales funnel of awareness, which you said was PR, and then they come onto the site and they look at your social media and they're interested in you because of your values and everything that you stand for and some of the products, and they find out more, they get to your website. It's a seamless experience.
Yeah. Well, we're working actually more on that because our conversion rate is actually really low on our website. And again, this goes from me being a maker, and a website was just like an add-on.
Yep.
You know, it was just a place that I could direct people from my market stores onto the website to, because they'd already seen it. They already knew what they wanted. But as the shop's grown, I've realized that actually we need to be a slick e-commerce platform, you know, with really easy customer, you know, customer use, incentives, cart reminders, you know, all those things that you, again, I've just learned in the last 8 months very quickly. We've got now this photographer, those that are listening, I'm pointing at our photography studio. We're trying to take better photos of all the work and write really, really good product descriptions for SEO, because actually getting people to our website is really easy. We get thousands and thousands of people a month. But it's how to convert them. So we're just trying to get more information, like descriptions and sizes and just how the product feels, you know, really bulking out that description, better photos. And we've always been anti-discounts because we haven't got the profit margins, for one. And makers, you know, handmade goods are priced how they are because of the amount of time that's gone into making them. And obviously sustainable work is more expensive because eco materials tends to be more expensive. But that said, we are going to start doing like we send newsletters every 2 weeks.
Right.
And we're going to start doing like a 10% off for newsletter subscribers.
I was wondering how you kind of create that loyalty and get people coming back.
Yeah.
Because that's key, isn't it?
Yeah,
Your conversion rate on email is so much higher than it is on social media.
Exactly.
So have you got a significant number of subscribers on your email list now?
Yeah, we've got about 3,000.
Right.
Yeah.
In comparison to your social followers, which, how many have you got on Instagram?
11,000.
Yes.
200.
I mean, 3,000 is still great, isn't it? But if you can grow that.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's where your conversion really happens, isn't
it? Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And people subscribe because they want to know more.
Yeah.
Whereas Instagram, it's like a sea of entertainment rather than. Yeah. We're doing that. We've got a loyalty scheme that we set up this year, which is when you sign up, the more money you spend, the more stars you get, and then you can redeem those stars at checkout. But like anything, we're growing so fast, and we're having to like try and figure out all these things as we go. So it's trying to work out. We're still a bit clunky with describing the rewards system to customers, but it's on my things to do this week.
In amongst all the other things that you're trying to do. But I think what's beautiful about it is that you're doing this organically and you're growing, and it comes from the heart, and you've not got a professional background in it. And I think one thing that you probably know this already, which is, as I said at the beginning, one of the reasons why I was really interested in Prior Shop is the way that shops like, or what you're doing, is creating a reason for people to come here. Prior Shop
attracts people to Old Market, attracts people to Cabot because of what you're doing.
Yeah.
And I think...
That's nice to hear. That's nice to think about. Yeah.
I do think that. And I think that... I think what you're doing epitomises what a destination should be doing. Mm. You've created a community of local people doing amazing things. You've brought the creatives together. You are local people who are just... people want to know about. And they I came in here today and there wasn't your salespeople are the makers.
Yeah.
So immediately they were talking to me about their product or, you know, they weren't selling it to me. They were just, I was so interested. I actually stopped shopping, which is probably to their detriment. But, you know, to me that makes me want to come back. Mm. I like it here and it's a place that I want to come. And I think if you can expand that thinking and that feeling to a destination, just thinking now about Quaker's Friars and Cabot Circus, it was set up to be that. When it was built, it had a food quarter and, you know, that's... But it didn't really ever take off, I don't think. You've got a lot of kind of national brands, and I know of late over the past couple of years, then you've got a lot more independence here.
Yeah, yeah.
But how do you think, what in your mind, and if you're speaking from, you know, your experience so far, what could make Cabot Circus a better place for attracting visitors?
Yeah, but you know, interestingly, I did a Q&A about this on my stories. And I think... before, there used to be like retail, you know, like Saturday shopping days, let's go out and we'll spend the day in town. Lockdown has made even people that weren't shopping online shop online. Mm-hmm. You know, it's opened that kind of door of online shopping, basically. And people realize that every city center looks the same, you know, like it's always the same shops, it's always the same big brands, and it's all the same things that you can buy online. There's no worth of coming into shops anymore, in terms of commercial anyway. So I think that's what the value of independence is. Not only supporting the local economy, because obviously you've got local accountants and local makers and local, you know, everything's considered locally. Like our flyers are printed down the road, you know, all these things that a big brand doesn't have. And also it makes it, as you said, like normally the owner of the shop is on the shop floor, you know, and there's that worth of why the shop's there and what it's trying to do. And lots of people say that when they come into our shop, like the care and intent that's been woven almost into the products as they were made, it does radiate into the space. Mm. In the conversations that you have with the staff and with the work and how it's displayed and everything feels so careful, you know, cared about, sorry. I suppose careful. And it just, yeah, it just makes for a calmer shopping experience, doesn't it? So I think city centres need more independence in any shape or form, because whether it's a cafe or an independent shop or a art gallery or a creative space, you know, no matter what it is, if it's independent, it's gonna radiate the same personal thing into it. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So the Q&A thing, people were saying that they would like more experiences, more things, more independence, more things that you can't buy online, more independent cafes and eateries, and more events. So like more markets and things. So there's the sustainable market, which has just started in Broadmead. That's once every month. Mm. We've applied to Bristol City Council. So if anyone's listening from Bristol City Council, please, please, can you say yes? So we've applied for some funding to run a monthly market here at Quakers. Mm-hmm. And yeah, entertainment and local performers and stuff. So yeah, I just think more things that are different. Yeah,
it must be really difficult, I think, because it's Hammersons that kind of own the space, isn't it? And they've got this business model that's based on, you know, they've got people to, you know, shareholders to answer to and so on. And they've put these targets together.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I guess if the shops are empty, There's going to be nobody here.
Exactly.
So yeah. It's going to have a knock-on effect to the bigger shops through which they are making money from, exactly. For example. And I guess it's that combination of small and large.
Exactly. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, that's a really good point, actually, because there are still loads of people that come to Harvey Nicks, which is a few doors down.
Yeah.
And we would probably notice a drop in footfall if they weren't here. So it's not about making it all independent.
Yeah.
But there is a... Are you on Facebook? There's a page called Bristol Now and Then or Photographs
Now and
Then.
Yes, I've seen, yeah.
And whenever photos are shared of town before the war, there's always comments going, oh, it used to look so beautiful, all that local trade, and look at all those hand-painted signs and all that kind of stuff. And that's coming back. Mm. Like, it's seriously coming back.
Mm.
But yeah, but we do also need the bigger companies to sort of be in between us as well to keep that footfall, that tourism footfall as well.
And I guess it's about the people that live and work in the area. You mentioned Old Market and the fact that the offices have now changed the way in which they're working. And so they're not coming into the city anymore. And I think that's the challenge. I had this conversation with Viv Kennedy from the BID about getting people into the city. And Viv said at the time, she said, I'd love to see a baker. I'd love to see a florist, kind of more local businesses. And in terms of accommodation coming in and more residential, you need people getting up in the morning and going to buy their local products.
Exactly.
And there's more student accommodation that's being built. And I know that student accommodation in Bristol is going mental. There always seems to be some big student accommodation happening. In terms of markets, do you think that that's a good thing for you for the future? And I can, you know, how do you think that that will help you?
Develop. Back to also before about Hammerson's, they are so supportive of independence. They're really, really, even though they're a massive corporate, you know, company, they have lots of people that are on the ground who are so, so supportive and have really helped us out actually quite a lot. And they are really up for markets and more independent things popping up. And in terms of whether these kind of like independent events would be suitable for students, I think so. I think that in Old Market, we used to have lots of high price point things and our average order value was always quite high and people came to us for those specific products. In Cabot, we've had to shift that massively because we've still got all those high price point lamps, you know, those big floor lamps and hand-woven cushions that have taken like 5 days to make and all these kind of things. But because of such a varied customer profile, our order value has gone down and we make sure we have lots of key rings, lots of postcards, lots of little things that people can just pick up, you know. So I think as long as businesses are adaptable to being able to, you know, have things that are available for lots of different customer types, I think students are a great addition, to be honest. And I think students are definitely more aware, well, younger people are definitely more aware about sustainable, being responsible within their lifestyle choices. And we have lots of young people actually as our customer base, which wasn't the case before Cabot.
Just flipping that around and going back to Old Market and what's going on over there. I mean, do you think that there is this hybrid model now of people working from home and people are being asked to come back into the offices and stuff, aren't they? So hopefully that will have a positive effect. But what do you think, how do you think the Old Market could change? You talked about the fast roads that go through there. Is it a 20 mile an hour? I guess with emergency vehicles, they're not going to put any sleeping policemen and that kind of like traffic management.
No, exactly.
In there, are they?
So apparently, you've got the Old Market Neighbourhood Association, which is led by this amazing guy who's trying to do the best he can with trying to help with funding, because each area gets SEAL money. Do you know about SEAL money?
No.
I think it's CIL. And it's every time there's a new development from a big company, that company have to put a little bit of money into the SEAL money, which helps improve that area.
Right, yes, yes. I didn't know that was the name.
The still money can't be used on anything that the council should already be doing.
Right.
So it can't do like more bin waste management or anything like that. But I think there's an idea to try and turn it back into two-way traffic, or to put some planters, big planters on the road, or small things.
Yeah.
It's difficult with such a main route that will cost, I mean, I don't know, billions of pounds. I mean, I don't know how much road infrastructure costs, but, and also it's always such a long term, you know, and small businesses are so like, never know what's happening next month, let alone the next year.
Mm.
But there's lots of changes to Old Market in terms of development. But I think, unfortunately, lots of landlords have let their buildings go into a bit disrepair that they can't rent out, and they're just holding onto it until a developer buys them up. So it's a strange time at the moment, because everyone's kind of, I don't know what the right saying is, like doggy paddling until the big developers come.
Yeah. And everything that's going on with the world,
exactly,
isn't it?
Exactly.
Fuel crisis and everything is tight. I think what you've done over there, Prior Shop, and I know that you did an exhibition on the people that work there.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And you've used your marketing reach to support and help that. And I think, you know, fair play. That's amazing. Well done.
Thanks. Yeah. So we're a non-profit. So at the end of each quarter, we use any surplus money to offer free community workshops and donate to charity, and just be community, you know, do great things for where we are. And so we did I paid Joe Hounsome, who's a photographer, a local photographer, to take photos of all the businesses in Old Market who were up for it. So there's like 102 businesses in Old Market, and we got, I think, 70 photos taken.
Right.
And again, Old Market is so so fast, people don't realise that behind that closed door that looks like it's never open, it's actually like a TARDIS of like a printing studio or a screen printers or a, you know, whatever, motorcycle shop.
It does surprise me to hear that. And I was looking through your Instagram stories, because you do that profile, don't you, on each of the story, and you've got all these places. I'm like, is that really there?
Oh my God. Yeah, people just can't believe it. And then we had them all printed and it's exhibited still downstairs.
Oh, is it?
I'm going to have a
look at that and maybe share some of the photos on social when I go out. Yeah.
So yeah, it's just great. And it was really, and then I spoke to Bristol Life magazine, and they were going to do just like a page, like a little bit on the page to say it was happening. And then they found out more about it. And Derry, who was the journalist at the time, she was like, I think she got a Bristol Life Award actually this year. But anyway, she ended up loving the project so much, she did like a 12-page feature on it in the magazine. Mm. And it was just to, shine the light on all these incredible businesses that were there.
And it's about the people, though, as well, wasn't it?
I really like portraits of people in their space,
I think that's so important, because my local high street is Staple Hill.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I see a magazine that comes through on a monthly basis, and it's just the front of the shop. It describes the products, and it's exactly the same copy, exactly the same photo every week. And it's killing me, because I want to actually go and interview those people. I'm not a writer, but I want to go and interview the shop owner and tell me your story, take a picture of the person, because it'll bring it to life.
If I
make that connection with that person, I want to buy from them because I hear their story and I want to support them.
Exactly. I think every customer that comes in the shop, we give them a flyer and say, have you heard about the shop? You know, we're trying to do something new on the high street. You know, everything is handmade. Because even though we've got signs everywhere that say we're local and we're independent, people don't read signs, you know. They're too busy looking at the lovely products. But it's really nice when people go, is it?
Mm.
You know, when you say 70% of it's made in Bristol, it's handmade, you know. You know, we're opposite Ted Baker and next door to Oliver Bonus and Fat Face. You know, you just wouldn't expect it here.
Yes.
But yeah, it's great. And it's been received really well. But it's tough in terms of sales. Some months we're great and we've got lots of sales, and other months it's tight, really, really tight.
Mm.
And it's just because the overheads are so expensive.
Mm.
And even like a building of this size, especially with energy going up and Royal Mail prices have gone up, and obviously staff, national insurance, everything's gone up as for me as an employer. It's tight.
Mm.
And it's so hard to like, it's really hard when you are so conscious about other people's situations. And I never want to be I never want to push sales on people, but at the same time, it's like, but please buy that key ring, you know, like, please buy that card.
Breaks my heart that you're talking about key rings and cards. Yeah,
but this is it. Like, but it's that whole, like, just a card movement, you know, that if everyone bought just a card from their independent shop, it would keep everyone going.
Oh, do you hear that, people listening?
Yeah.
You really need to come down here because your product range is unbelievable. I mean, cards and keyrings are phenomenal, but the whole product range is just absolutely beautiful. And and you've got workshops as well. Mm-hmm. Which so by the time this podcast goes out, which will be in mid to late July.
Mm-hmm.
You will have what kind of workshops? Tell me, rather than specifics, what kind of workshops do you do here?
It's so varied. Mm-hmm. It's so varied.
Tell me what's coming up now then.
Coming up. So we've got calligraphy. We've got edible face mask workshop. We've got aromatherapy workshops. We've got a poetry where you write poetry, but then you sew the poems to make wearable poems. We've got Everyday Racism's book launch mid-July, which is Natalie and Naomi from Everyday Racism, their social media platform.
Yeah.
We've got, what else have we got coming up? We've just had a sew your own tote bag workshop. So yeah, we leave it as a real open. So we've got an application form on our website for workshop hosts to apply.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't limit, you know, as long as it's still got a responsible, you know, theme to it. And also it's just to empower people with skills and just feeling like they're socializing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the most important thing for the space, is to get people out and just learning things and being around people.
And you've got it's a space that people can rent out.
Yep.
Is it? It's from a, you know, is that corporates and what capacity are you looking at?
So it can fit 80 people sitting down.
Mm-hmm.
For workshops, we've got tables and chairs, really comfy chairs for 30 people per workshop. And we've got like a projector, and we're trying to get more. We haven't had any corporate bookings yet, but we've just realised that actually to stay here and to sustain the business, we definitely need to start having like a regular chunk of money coming in from somewhere.
Yeah.
And actually, why can't this place be the go-to place for launches and meetings and presentations and things like that? But again, this is what we said before the podcast, that I completely underestimated how much time it eats from my time of managing it all.
Yeah.
And my goal for the shop is to, I love doing all of this, but I also need time for that creative drive. I need time to always think outside the box and think of new incomes and revenues and new ways of doing things, because that's what's got us where we are now.
Yeah.
And at the moment I'm so drowned with general admin,
the business,
that I'm worried that we could become quite stationary, you know, and quite stagnant, maybe even.
Mm-hmm.
That's a bit of an extreme word, but you know.
Yeah.
I
can't ever imagine you becoming stagnant.
Well, this is it.
Fear.
Yeah,
but I can't imagine you doing that. Yeah.
And I would never, like, I never stop. I'm so passionate about it. I will keep pushing this and carrying this until I can't stand anymore. But then equally, you can't have the person leading it fall, because otherwise then everything falls. So my goal is to set up to be able to step back even more than I am already, so that I have got the space to bring these creative ideas.
Mm.
But I've got the most amazing team. The most amazing team.
How many have you got working with you?
9.
Right.
Now.
Okay.
Not including me, so 10 altogether. And they are incredible. I was speaking to my friend Laura, who founded Saffron Records, another right. Bristol organization. And we were saying that yes, it's nice to have praise as the founder, but without a team, you're nothing, like absolutely nothing. Mm. Like just the fact that we can record this podcast and there's 3 people downstairs doing stock takes and serving customers and doing the display and managing the till and, you know, like what is a business if it's just you in a building on by yourself?
Oh, well, you've done unbelievable things from where you were, you know, when you were thinking about taking over that shop in Old Market because you needed a bigger studio to this.
Now, I know.
It's amazing. So well done. And I really appreciate you coming on today.
Oh,
and I hope that there'll be lots of people that learn from this.
Oh, yeah, I hope so. And I always say that any questions that anyone's got, always message and Instagram and stuff. We're really like from a survival point of view, but also just want to make sure that we are connecting with everyone, you know.
Mm.
So if there's anything that you'd like to see us stock in the shop or any questions about it, just anything, just people to get in touch.
Yeah, well, I'll put your contact details at the bottom of the show notes and all about the shop. And, you know, for those listening, come along to Cabot Circus, Quakers Friars and the shop in Old Market and just check out. There's lots of independence in all of these spaces.
I was about to say, because next door, 2 doors down from us is Mila Plants, which is a fabulous, fabulous plant shop and homeware shop. And then a few doors down the other side, next door to Apple, is Fig One, which is also independent as well. So, it's quite a nice day out.
I know.
Between the 3 of us.
It is, definitely. Oh, thank you.
Oh, pleasure. Yeah, thanks.
Wasn't that great? Beck is just so wonderful. She exudes this quiet determination, but she's a force to be reckoned with, and I look forward to where she takes Prior next. Thanks so much for listening to today's podcast, our final episode before we break for the summer. Make sure you check out our other conversations over at elvesofthevisitoreconomy.co.uk if you haven't done already, and sign up to receive our newsletter to be the first to know who's next in the hot seat, along with marketing tips and insights that can help you in your business. If you haven't already done so, please subscribe to your channel of choice, whether that's Apple or Spotify. Please give us a review because it really helps. Take a moment also, I know I'm asking a lot here, take a moment this time to just fill in our short survey and give us some feedback about what you think of the podcast and who you'd like to hear and what you'd like to hear, length of the podcasts, etc. We've got a few questions. Please go to the show notes, fill it in. We'd be really grateful. I hope you have a great summer and I look forward to seeing you in September. Thanks for joining.